What's his excuse, I wonder?
Huh? All right. Bye. So, he says...
What was happening?
So, he says... I'll just tell you what he said before he gets on. He says, I had to step out. I had a cat thing. I totally forgot. I had to return some library movies.
One of which...
I had to return some videotapes.
He was definitely watching it at the last minute.
He was watching it in his car on a laptop.
Man, he rolls up and is walking through the door of the library as you hear, Robert Stroud remains in prison.
Hey, 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 yeah. Yo, come on, let one handle your business for me, boy.
What happened to that boy?
Yeah.
What happened
hey,
to
welcome
that
to FilmNerds.com. I am Matt Scalise, and we're here for another episode of the Film Club podcast series. Every month, one of our group here picks a movie, and the rest of us all have to watch it, and then we come here and talk about it. So this is our third episode in the series, I believe, and this month's selection was made by Mr. Ben Flanagan, who I will turn the mic over to now and let him introduce the movie and tell us why he chose the movie that he chose for this month's podcast. So, Ben, go for it.
Well, there was nothing truly emphatic about this choice made. As people know, if they listened to the last podcast, there were lots of choices that I indecisively gave everybody in this group to choose from. And I think that's the one that obviously everybody came down to. But the main reason I wanted to see this movie is because I had never seen it, first of all. And it was a movie that my dad, Steve Flanagan, recommended to me and my brother many, many years ago when we were young children, and it always sounded interesting to me, and I always wanted to see it, but I was just never afforded the opportunity to on VHS or on cable or anything. And finally, my public library in Tuscaloosa, I saw I had a copy of it, and obviously we have access to Netflix, so I had the opportunity, and I had the choice to see something I'd never seen before for this, and I thought it would be great. And another reason too is I don't feel like that I personally have explored the catalog of John Frankenheimer enough. I've seen a few of his movies, several of his 90s movies like Ronin and The Island of Dr. Moreau in the theater and the George Wallace TV movie that I think came on TNT, and a handful of his others like The Train from the 60s and a couple of others, and I've never seen The Manchurian Candidate. It probably belongs on my shelf of shame, or one of them at least. So it's just another opportunity to get more familiar with the works of John Frankenheimer. I know that he's a true auteur and kind of a journeyman filmmaker at the same time. And I've got a lot of respect for him. I just need to see more of his movies. And also, I haven't seen many of Burt Lancaster's movies. Maybe just two or three in my lifetime. So, and this is just a major movie star that I know people are really high on, and I just don't have that much familiarity with it. So there are several factors that go into it, but the main one is just I've never seen it before.
Well, we will definitely talk about Burt Lancaster and spend some time on him later in the podcast. But just before we get into specifics on that, I kind of want to get everybody's reaction to this movie. And we should just sort of quickly set it out that it's a 1962 film. It was one of two movies that Frankenheimer did in 62, along with, as you mentioned, The Manchurian Candidate. And it follows the life story, quote-unquote, I guess, of Robert Stroud, who became known as the Birdman. For some reason, the title of the film refers to him as the Birdman of Alcatraz, despite the fact that he does not actually ever have birds while he's in Alcatraz. But, you know, there's some... If you go and research this movie online, there's a lot of dispute about the historical accuracy of it, and how true to the real life Robert Stroud this character is. But putting that stuff aside, just as a movie, you know, if we were to assume this was all just fiction, I kind of want to know what everybody thinks about it and how it works. So let me start with Graham.
Yeah, first of all, thank you to Ben for picking this. As he mentioned, it was recommended to us by our dad many, many years ago, but we just never got around to it because we were you know, we preferred to rent the latest Survivor series or something. but I really enjoyed it, and I think it's honestly the best overall pick out of the three we've had so far. And I think I definitely enjoyed this movie on many levels, both aesthetically and thematically. And although what we see in the movie does differ somewhat from the historical facts that surround this character, Robert Stroud, played by Burt Lancaster, I feel like this movie, without it, there would be no Shawshank Redemption and there would be no Green Mile, both coincidentally Frank Darabont movies, but those are two of the more well-known prison movies. And I think that this movie laid the groundwork for those movies and other prison movies that sort of where you see the arc of a character in the penal system.
Ben Stark, and also, I kind of want to get your take on this, Ben. I sort of am mentioning the idea that just us giving our opinions on it, discarding any sort of historical inaccuracies that might be at issue here. But I mean, is that the right thing to do? Is that fair? Is that something we should be taking into account?
No, I think absolutely we should be taking it as the film that's laid before us, irregardless of any kind of real life activities. I think the movie kind of sets itself up for that. It kind of asks for it by actually introducing the author of the book as a kind of narrator character. Tom Gaddis, played by Edmund O'Brien, kind of opens the movie and kind of narrates the movie. And I think sometimes I think that asks us to kind of, you know, Google, you know, whenever we're done with the film and Google the story and figure out how real it really was. But I think it also asks us to accept some of the leaps that the story makes and then kind of fills in the gaps that it fills in with the narration. So I think, I don't know, that's a touch that I think is interesting, but I'm not sure if it necessarily helps the film on a whole. And I think that's probably what drives people to, I mean, obviously it's a true life story, but I think that's what drives people to really dig in more to the real life story. If it just started with Robert Stroud and followed him as the perspective through the rest of the movie, I think we'd be less inclined to try to dig into who this guy was in real life.
Craig, I'm kind of curious what your take is on this movie. And, I mean, Graham called this his favorite of the three so far. Do you agree with that assessment?
That's a good question, because I liked The Trial for an entirely different reason than I liked Birdman of Alcatraz. Birdman of Alcatraz, while it was long and while it did take a little bit to get going, I thought the payoff was okay. I thought it was worth it sitting through that, because while there were no birds at Alcatraz, I think they told the story of the individual pretty well. But to answer your question, I think just stylistically that trumps the story of Birdman. The Trial style trumps the story of Birdman for me. So
yeah.
Well,
it's getting competitive.
I just feel like that the arc, I think that the story and style combined trump The Trial. And I'm not trying to say one's better than the other, but to me,
that's exactly what you're saying.
No, well, listen, it's just my preference. I'm not saying that one is better objectively than the other, but I think that for me, this movie there's a little more to it in terms of the character arc of Stroud. You know, I feel like even though it turns out that he's a great intellectual and he maybe even a genius, a scientist, and a great deep mind that, you know, ideally would have been in the world doing good, he's stupid. He's not smart. And that's revealed later when, you know, he could basically, if he's so smart, he figured out a way to play by the rules, get out of prison, and then expose the penal system for all its faults. And the fact that his pride was too big, you know, he never really changed. I mean, he just constantly found ways to stay in prison. You know, even at the beginning, he was beating people up, killing people even. But then at the end, he was, you know, spouting off his ideals that, that offended the warden into to keeping him in prison. It just goes to show that this man was not as smart as he might appear to be on the surface. Well, that's a strong arc to me, and I didn't get that in the trial. At least the trial to me was great on its aesthetics for the most part.
Well, I don't think that I would say that he's stupid. I mean, I do think that he doesn't change over the course of the movie, and I think that he what his sort of argument is, I guess, is that, you know, he probably deserves to be there for what he did, but that the way that, that prison is set up is that it basically robs all of society, in addition to the prisoners there, of whatever valuable contributions the people inside prison could be making, the way that it was set up at the time. So, I mean, I'm not sure that he's necessarily trying to say that he's become a better man or that he has reformed, because I think he probably, it seems like he's given some opportunities to say that, and he doesn't say it, and I think we're supposed to feel that he would be betraying some kind of principle if he sort of bowed down to the Carl Malden character and sort of, like, you know, was sort of like a trained animal and said, see, I'm better now. I can, you know, do what you tell me to do. Because he wouldn't have been able to accomplish what he accomplished if he was that kind of person. I don't know. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I think that, you know, at the end, near the end, when he's faced with the option, or when he's trying to help the guy that's been shot in the prison riot sequence, he says, he tries to help the young man understand the value of life and how it's worth living. And it's like his character didn't ever fully understand that. You know, if he really valued life, he would have kind of come to terms with it, swallowed his pride, figured out how he needed to get out. If he was so smart and he knew how to engineer all these bridges and all these potions to save these animals, he should have been able to engineer a way for him to get out, get the proper facilities, get the proper equipment, and really do good in the world. But he wasn't ever strong enough to do that. And that's why it's ultimately a tragedy for me.
Right. It is kind of interesting how it ends, too, story-wise, because they kind of leave you with this little bit of, you know, hope, I guess, at the end. And it's strange because I'm pretty sure that the movie came out maybe like a year before the real Robert Stroud actually died. And, you know, he obviously didn't make it much, you know, he didn't make it out of prison. And I think he actually sort of, according to some of the trivia stuff that I've read, he sort of ended up being overshadowed in the end because he died like the day before the Kennedy assassination. So, you know, all of this sort of, you know, memorializing that would have been done of him and what he had accomplished sort of gets washed away. But again, that's not really part of the movie. I mean, I do think a lot of what we're able to get out of this character has to do with Burt Lancaster. So I want to go ahead and bring that discussion up, starting with Ben Flanagan. But Ben, you said you hadn't seen a lot of Burt Lancaster performances. Can you, do you know immediately of any that you have seen?
I definitely have seen The Train, which John Frankenheimer also made in the early 60s. And I have seen The Sweet Smell of Success, where he co-starred with Tony Curtis, and he's playing a decidedly different character in that than this. But his movie star persona has always intrigued me because on the surface, there's just not really much that sticks out or stands out about Burt Lancaster. His, you know, you start with his face. I mean, in this movie, he's just got a mean mug, and this character is just such a difficult, unlikable, most of the time, character. And I think it's interesting that somebody like him, this movie star, would play this sort of anti-hero of sorts, where it really is a struggle for the audience to come around for him because he's such a troublemaker and he's such a troubled figure. And usually with these prison movies that we've seen, certainly the ones that Graham mentioned, we're pulling for those inmates to make good and find salvation or redemption. And he certainly makes it really hard for us. It's like that guard says about him fairly early in the movie. He says, "You ain't got much, Stroud, but you keep subtracting from it." You know, so he what little he does have, he doesn't use it to his advantage. And to me, I think Burt Lancaster, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for pulling off a character like that and for being a movie star at the time to do so, again, to play such an unlikable figure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting because this – I kind of agree with you, Ben. It's curious that this guy who I think really of the sort of big mega stars of that era, Lancaster's – I guess, like, his legacy hasn't really stood the test of time. I mean, he's still obviously really well-respected, and people who love movies have seen his movies, but he hasn't achieved the kind of icon status that a lot of other people have, it seems like to me. You know, like, I think he was probably... I mean, Craig probably knows this better than I do, I'm sure, because of your experience with the movies of this era, Craig. But, I mean, this... I mean, he was a big name, right? I mean, we were talking probably one of the big franchises of Hollywood.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was in just a crap ton of stuff, and I'm actually not a huge fan of Burt Lancaster because I find his acting style like stiff, and I think that's just a product of the era from which he comes, and you notice that a lot. Was he in Airport?
Yes.
And you really see that. That's early 70s, and you can see
that's
sort of
pretty late in his career, though.
Right, yeah, but he doesn't lose the style. He's still old school, and it really shows how just kind of stiff-necked he is in his style. But Elmer Gantry is a fantastic movie where he really comes out like, you know, a flamboyant preacher, you know.
Isn't he the one that's, like, getting it on with that chick on the beach in From Here to Eternity?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Elmer Gantry is one of the ones that I've... That's one of, like, the early movies of that era that I saw. And it's pretty intense. And I know that was... I mean, that's... To me, when I saw this movie and you guys talk about that maybe he was playing against type, I think this was sort of, like, in a row here. He was coming off of Elmer Gantry, where he plays a pretty bad dude, pretty slimy character, and then Judgment at Nuremberg, where he plays, a Nazi. So I think this was sort of, I mean, maybe earlier in his career, he was sort of the leading man, but I think by this point, he had seems to have really made a career out of being kind of the anti-hero.
Such an interesting looking actor to me. Like, he looks like no other movie star of that era. You know, he almost looks contemporary in a way, just in that he just has this very rugged exterior. And I think he has sort of a physical unpredictability that you didn't really see back then. I think, you know, Brando is one of the guys who could pull that off, certainly back during that era. But I find at least that interesting. I think
it's funny that you say that, Ben, because you were talking about the Island of Dr. Moreau earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that a lot.
He played Dr. Moreau before Brando did.
Yeah, Island of Dr. Moreau is not so good, but and I remember from the theater where I saw it. But no, I find that really interesting about Lancaster, at least, and specifically in this movie, where again you don't really know what he's going to do next, and again you're hoping that he makes the right decision, he tries to better himself, but he can't do it. He, you know, for whatever reason, like Graham said, his pride just gets in the way, and he's just such a frustrating character. But I think in turn makes it really fascinating. I mean, he's obviously damaged goods. He's you know, a guy who kills for his mama. Even when they don't have a very healthy relationship, she manipulates him. And later in the movie, obviously, they become dead to each other. And you have to wonder, from his perspective, was it all worth it? I mean, you guys mentioned that there are no birdmen, there are no birds in Alcatraz. But, I mean, this is such a cool title. Birdman of Alcatraz is one of the coolest titles ever. But it's a lot better than Mama's Boy of Leavenworth.
Right.
Which is probably what this movie should be called.
Yeah, it's I don't know why that became. I mean, I think my impression is that name predated the movie coming out and the book probably too, because I think he just became, you know, as it's detailed in the movie, he became somewhat of a kind of a little press darling for a while. And when you go take the Alcatraz tour, I mean, they show you his cell that he was in, and they, you know, they talk about, you know, I mean, I was a kid when I went there, but I definitely remember them talking about the birds, and I always just assumed that he kept the birds there.
Well, let's talk about the birds, y'all.
Okay.
I've seen in my reading about this, you know, a lot of people recommend this as a movie that would be good to watch with your kids. in some ways, I highly disagree about that, you know, with that.
Well, especially with the whole, you know, prison riot at the end. But
yeah, that's pretty
and
dark.
Every animal in the movie dying at one point.
And the relationship with Carl Malden.
Dr. Doolittle.
The Carl Malden relationship is just way too dark and you know, negative for a kid to watch, I think. But I think that the parts of this movie that definitely would appeal to kids and to me were some of the most absolutely entertaining and endearing moments were when he's training the birds, when he first finds the little bird, when he initially teaches the birds to fly and feeds them and makes all these contraptions for them. And I thought that was some of the best material in the movie, especially in terms of filmmaking and editing and the way they shot this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was the high point of the movie for me, was just seeing this guy that's kind of like turned his back on life, rediscovering the beauty and the majesty of life in kind of microcosm. And there's that one long take where he actually where we with him watch the, you know, a bird hatching from an egg. And I can't figure out how they did that, if that was just coincidence that they had the camera set up and were waiting on an egg to hatch, or if that was somehow a Jurassic Park style, you know.
Come on.
Bird. Yeah.
Push, 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 little one.
I've been here for the birth of every bird on this island. Right. So, I mean, that for me, I agree with Graham. That was a high point for me in the movie, where you just saw, and Lancaster sold it absolutely, this transformation where he had like a renewed interest in life and living.
My favorite scene in the movie, and you know, we're talking about this character, how he's destroyed by his own pride, but my favorite scene in the movie that I think we could put in the great scenes category happens, and it's sort of the turning point in the movie, is when he has the scene with the guard where he's asking him for the box, the apple box, and the guard basically says, "Look, if you want the box, you have to be civil." You know, and that's the overarching theme of this movie is civilization. This guy, whether or not he wants to be in civilization, you can act like an ass, you can kick people, you can shoot people in Alaska if you want, you can stab guards if you want, but then if you do that, you can't be part of civilization, you can't be part of society. And for a split second in this movie, in that scene, he realizes that if he just swallows his pride, acts civil with people, is polite, is kind, it uses manners, that he can get what he wants. And then he finds out that it's not that hard.
But don't,
and things get better for him. But then things get worse, I think, later because of how he his relationship with his mom and all that. But that's my favorite scene in the movie.
Well, I want to bring up something to that point, Graham. And it's one of the other nominated performances from this movie, which is Telly Savalas, who is the prisoner in the cell over from him in Leavenworth. And he meets up with him again later in Alcatraz. And by the time you see him then, he's a different person. He's a different character who's become this sort of, you know, I think he has become molded in the form that the Carl Malden character wants all of his prisoners to take. And I think there's something about that scene that I think certainly the, you know, the Robert Stroud character, and I think us as an audience with him, we're supposed to, I think, look at that character and say, I don't think that's right. Like, that's not a good alternative to whatever Stroud is going through. Yes, you know, he's probably got it easier. He's got a few privileges now. But he's this little beaten, cowering mouse of a person, and I think we're supposed to feel less, you know, respect for that. I think we're supposed to think that's not the way to do it. I mean, am I the only one that felt that way?
Well, no, and that I'm sorry to keep talking. I want to give it, if somebody else that wants to jump in, please feel free. But, you know, obviously they used Savalas' character, was Gomez, right, as sort of the symbol of the failure of the penal system. But, you know, in that conversation, you know, Stroud's asking him how in that conversation, Stroud asks him how many years he's been in prison. And, obviously Gomez, it's suggested earlier, there's something wrong with him. Even though he shows compassion for the birds, he'll jump into these quick fits of sort of bottled rage and smoke his cigarette and then kind of soften up and then get angry again and make a threat, you know. I think that's what the movie was trying to do. But again, I think that this movie's a little more layered than some people might give it credit for. I think there's more to it. It's a really smart and complex movie with complex characters. And I think that Savalas' character is an example of that for sure.
Well, I think that it also makes an argument for the potential for the penal system and, you know, within the Burt Lancaster character, within Stroud. Because, you know, this movie tells a great story about renewed potential in human beings. And if they give themselves an opportunity to use self-discipline and to find something within themselves that they never thought that was possible, then they can accomplish great things. And surely Robert Stroud had no idea that, you know, he could be one of the leading voices in bird science. And to me, I think that this, in a way, celebrates the way prison can find this in people. And, you know, that this is what it's designed for. It's designed for rehabilitation. And if he's not able to realize this 100%, but he's able to find this shred of what he could be and what he does realize to some extent. But there are, again, shreds of his own humanity and his own troubled past and nature that prevent him from realizing his full potential.
Hey, real quick, I'd like Ben. I haven't seen Only God Forgives, but in the sense of mother son dynamic, is there a parallel there with this movie?
I think you could make the argument for a lot of movies that have that kind of parallel. But sure, there's sort of an Oedipal thing going on in each of these movies, but it's nothing new.
Yeah, and I guess there's in Frankenheimer, there's Manchurian Candidate too.
That's right. Yeah.
As a mother-son relationship.
He had some stuff going on in 1962.
Well, I think
to talk to Mom.
I think Frankenheimer, again, if you talk about potential, again, I hadn't seen many of his early movies, but I think he showed several times in this film why he stood out as a filmmaker and as an auteur. And I feel like Frankenheimer has always been kind of underrated as a director. I think he's stood in the shadows of other filmmakers, his own contemporaries. But there are just little moments in this that I hadn't really seen in films of the same era. Like, for instance, when Stroud decides in just spontaneously that he's going to kill when this guy prevents him from visiting with his mother. That was a scary moment for me, and one that I wasn't used to from films in the early 60s. You know, I hadn't seen many prison set movies, but that was just a moment of violence that struck me that I thought was really interesting. And my favorite scene probably in the movie, Ben, you already mentioned the egg hatching scene, which is great. And then when he's walking the yard by himself and he finds the little runty bird, those are great scenes. But I think the one that Graham mentioned before, when the prison's riot is going on and Stroud has just he's got to make a decision at this point to help the penal system out and help the Carl Malden character. He knows that it's the right thing to do, even after he's tried to help this young man, like Graham said, find a new understand that, you know, there is a reason to go on living. That was my favorite sequence, and I think that Frankenheimer really showed his deft touch, and that was just a really beautifully designed
sequence too. I think just the art direction was impeccable, and that's when the photography really stands out too. So I think Frankenheimer really, really stands out as a director in this film.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he came from TV, and it's going to sound like an insult if I say that the whole movie looks like an episode of The Twilight Zone, but really, I mean, The Twilight Zone was a highlight of directing at the time. And it used that same kind of expressionist photography, especially in the jailbreak sequence.
The jailbait sequence?
The jailbait sequence. Hey-o.
I must have got the edited version.
You got to get this version from the Tuscaloosa Public Library.
I think you need to see the tube.com version.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for that editing.
We just got the explicit tag on iTunes.
Yeah.
Right, so in that jailbreak sequence, it kind of evoked The Twilight Zone for me, and that sounds like an insult because The Twilight Zone was a TV show at the time, but he shot it in an expressionist way that it's almost like a fantasy sequence, which...
Nightmare,
a nightmare, exactly, which the rest of the movie didn't reflect. So, yeah, I absolutely think that this is... I think this was Frankenheimer's first big thing that wasn't TV, if I read correctly. I think this was before Manchurian Candidate.
Yes, it was. Well, I mean, they came out the same year, though.
Same year, but right. But I think that this was definitely him kind of showing off and showing, okay, yeah, I can do cinematic.
He worked on a show called Playhouse 90, which was like, I think, up there in terms of respectable filmmakers getting their start on directing for television. And actually, I believe that Rod Serling was involved in that show.
Hey, do you guys think that we're the only ones on Frankenheimer's IMDb page right now?
Was this movie before Reindeer Games?
I think so.
Yeah, this was late Frankenheimer.
Yeah.
No, I really do want to take this moment to say www.thenocturnalthird.com.
Thank you. The streak continues.
Right, one
it's
thing.
Craig.blogspot.com.
I remember the part where Stroud first meets the lady that will eventually become his wife, Stella, in prison. And before she leaves, he asks for one favor, and the favor is if he can look through her purse. And I was like, hey, that's Craig's move. Did y'all think that the part where Carl Malden comes and gives him the government's deal, like, you can continue to run your profitable bird business, but you'll only get a small percentage of the profits, and the penal system will get the rest. Did you guys kind of see that as a metaphor for the NCAA's deal that they have with student athletes? Everybody's really ready for football season.
It's got that O'Bannon stank all over it.
There is 0%. I would say there's less than a tenth of a percent of the public that will have both been interested enough to listen to a Birdman of Alcatraz podcast and know what the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit is.
I might bring this movie up on Feinbaum tomorrow.
Oh man.
I did want to mention really quickly though, before we finish, Craig, I know you're the Oscar expert of the 1960s era here. So I know I've got Lancaster and Telly Savalas, and then the mother, Thelma Ritter, were all nominated. Do you have it in front of you what else this movie was nominated for?
Yes, it was nominated for Ritter, Lancaster, Savalas, and then cinematography, black and white, which makes sense. And that was
This was back when they had separate categories for cinematography?
Right, okay. Yeah.
Hey, Craig?
Yeah.
Did you watch this movie?
Sorry for not butting in. Everyone's comments were spot on. I completely agree.
He didn't. He just wanted to hang out on Skype. He's wearing lipstick right now.
Yeah. Dude, I was the first one to watch this movie.
He was. He was.
He's just forgotten everything.
It was so long ago. 2 months ago.
No, dude, but Carl Malden has a monopoly on the supporting actor category in this.
But he wasn't even nominated for this.
I know. Yeah.
Anybody else find it different how he did not appear to age at all in this movie, yet Burt Lancaster would age like 10 years, you know, every cross dissolved.
Carl Malden didn't age in real life, though. He looks exactly the same in every movie I've ever seen him in.
He was 97 when he died, like, 4 years ago.
And he had the same old button nose.
like Santa? Yeah. Carl Malden, yeah, I don't ever remember seeing him in anything when he was really old. I'm sure he was still working. Actually, I think he was on the West Wing, maybe, which must have been like right before he died. But
no, it was 9 years before he died.
Oh man. So yeah, that dude hung around.
I just want to make a couple of quick comments. Again, thank you to Ben for picking this. I'm glad I saw it, and I would definitely come back to this to watch it again. A couple of things I found humorous in the movie. One of the lines that Stroud uses as he's about to set one of his birds free that stuck with me, and I wrote it down, and I'd like to say it maybe one day to my son, you know, after he graduates high school, as he says, "Find yourself a fat mama and make a family." I really like that.
Fat mama.
And then here's a joke that I'm sure that my dad would appreciate if he saw it again. I'm sure he appreciated it back then. When Stroud is initially trying to get the bottle from the guard hesitates for a second before giving it to him and says, "What about the refund?"
Right.
People really thought that way back then. For the 1 cent. What
I
about
owe you
the-
a penny, yeah.
Yeah, that reminds
what
me of
about
the
refund?
That reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where Kramer and Newman try and take all those bottles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but my favorite part was when he sets one of those birds on fire. You know, when they finally release him, though, I think that was a good way to end the film. On a happy note.
Well, real quick, the best supporting actor, does anybody else think that the guy that played the guard, I think the guard's name was Bull, I feel like he should have been nominated over Telly Savalas. Am I crazy for saying that?
After I saw the movie, I was pretty surprised that Telly Savalas was nominated because it's a really small role.
Yeah. I mean, he just whines about his birds a little bit and then shows up at the end.
Right.
Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree with you, Stark, because, I mean, I think that's when some of the most poignant moments of the movie occurs between Stroud and the guard, especially like Graham said, when he's trying to get the box and
yeah, bottles, that scene is amazing.
The bottle sequence was great, and then when Stroud is moving out of that cell and they share that moment together, and he calls him his friend to his face, and you just see how far he's come and how much of a difference that guard made in his life. I thought that was a really nice moment.
Absolutely, he seems like such a more important character to Stroud than the Telly Savalas character. And who he kind of seems annoyed with the whole time.
On Savalas, this isn't going to do anything to convince you guys that I actually watched the movie, but his character, sometimes when I watch the movies, I think about how it would be remade, you know, and I feel like,
guys, he's got to go find his notebook where he wrote a joke.
You can't joke about it. You can't joke about a movie you haven't seen, can you?
You forgot what tab it was in.
Yeah, there you go. No, I see a lot of Tom Hardy in that
Evernote.
In that character, I think Tom Hardy-esque in that character, right? No, is it just me?
Well, the part where. Telly Savalas broke into Burt Lancaster's cell and asked him to rub his butt with oil so he could fight a bunch of guards. That was a lot like Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Bronson jokes. Anybody? Bronson jokes.
One more real thing. They left out. You know, they did mention that he initially got imprisoned because he. Killed a man who attacked a prostitute. They didn't go into detail on that. And according to the Wikipedia page on Stroud, He was a pimp.
That's right.
In Alaska.
Yeah.
And he only got charged with manslaughter for that.
I don't know if in the post code era if you could talk about somebody being a pimp or not. I don't know. Well,
they did say the word prostitute, and I was kind of disappointed early on. I was like, I want more details about what happened, and I want to know what they mean by when they say he came from good stock. Does that mean he came from a wealthy family, a well-to-do family, and he just kind of went down the wrong path? So initially that kind of bothered me, but then once all the bird stuff started happening, it kind of distracted me from all that background. But that was one thing initially. Yep, exactly. Pretty bird. Yeah.
Yeah. All I remember them saying about him, about the woman, is they just basically said, they kept saying, like, you know, you got mixed up with that woman. Did they really talk about her being a prostitute in the movie?
Yes. Yes. Huh. They said when he was reading, I think it was Malden initially, he was reading sort of the case file, and he said, you shot a man who attacked a prostitute named such and such. So, anyway, but it's pretty interesting to find out that he was a pimp in Alaska. So, I'm kind of interested to see, you know, the backstory. So,
yeah, well, all right. I mean, does anybody have anything else they want to bring up before we?
Craig does, apparently. I am.
Craig, do you want to read that to the rest of us? Do you want to share your note that you're passing?
No, it's okay.
Oh, man. All right. Well, so if nobody has anything else they want to bring up, I'm going to throw it to Craig to announce his selection for next month.
Okay, real quick, though. Real quick. Everyone go to your Skype menu and then click View.
Yeah.
And then go two down.
Right.
Does that sort by most recent?
No.
Maybe I need to update. Mine says recent.
No, I don't have that.
Mine does too. Yeah.
Okay, so I was going to pick Birth of the Nation.
Wait. If you didn't watch the movie, do you lose your privileges of selecting the?
No, I watched the movie. Y'all can quiz me.
Wait, hold on. Ben, did you see the trial?
You picked this movie.
Well, if you say you were going to watch it, that's one thing.
Hey, real quick though, this is another 1962 movie, so we should.
Yeah, it seemed interesting though.
Oh.
Oh.
But Craig agrees that the trial is a better 1962 movie. Right, Craig?
Craig's lost a little credibility.
I will say this. I think that this movie was easier for me to watch in one sitting.
God,
yes,
like,
me too.
But I got a lot more out of the trial, I think. Like, in the end, like, I probably will think more. The trial will stick in my brain a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because it was just so batshit crazy.
It invokes a little more feeling out of me. Like, the Birdman of Alcatraz it's a strong film, like, beginning to end. And it's a great story. But it's not, like, just...
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. Are we going to do star ratings
give whatever rating you choose using whatever system you would like to use. Start with you, Ben Flanagan.
Well, I totally agree with you guys. I think this is a really good movie. This isn't one that I really want to revisit like now or anytime soon. I think that this is one of those movies that you kind of get lost watching on like TCM if you have it on a Sunday morning. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, okay, well, that was a good way to spend a couple of hours and a half. I think it's really good. It's just, I'm glad I finally saw it. I see why my dad recommended it. And I'm glad I've seen more of Frankenheimer and Lancaster. But, yeah, I think you guys are right. I would give it a 3 out of 4.
There you go. All right, Graham?
I give it a 3.5 out of 4 and an A letter grade.
Double ratings. Ben Stark.
I'd probably give it a 3.5 out of 5, which is like a B. A B out of A pluses.
That's a C.
No, it's not. Dude, I got a chart.
All right, Craig. What do you have?
Yeah, it's a strong 3 out of 4.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A high 3 out of 4.
A high 3.
But you're not going fractions.
Right, no, I'm not. It's close, but it's just. I think the ending's a really good payoff.
It's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Think about that.
It is long. Yeah, 3.
I think that I'm going with Graham's 3.5 because I think it's just really well done. I like the performances. It spoke to me. I was emotionally moved by it, but I'm, you know, it's not a life changer, but still good, really good. So thanks for choosing that one, Ben.
And, yeah, sure. I'm anxious to hear what other than Birth of a Nation.
Right, other than a presumably lost silent film that's 6 hours long. But I want to
I
own that mug, dude.
Do you?
No, yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, I was going to pick that for real.
On Netflix.
I was going to pick that for real because you all thought I was going to pick something racist, but like that was a little bit out of left field. And it was on, and it's on Watch Instantly, but I just looked at it and it's over 3 hours, and yeah. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not watching.
It's a few reels.
You're not that racist.
No. So
his meetings are typically only 45 minutes long.
Song of the South's only 94 minutes.
That's right.
You can watch that twice.
It's rated G.
I want to know how many people here have actually forget it. I'm taking French Connection 2 by John Frankenheimer.
Oh my god.
I'm just kidding. I'm not.
Oh, I've been totally into that.
Who's seen Following by Christopher Nolan?
I have not.
I haven't either. And that's Stark has.
Starcast? Graham, have you seen it?
No, I have not. I would be totally down with that.
Stark, how would you feel about that, about doing a podcast on that?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun. I love it.
Okay, even though you've already seen it, you're cool.
It's his worst movie, but that means it's still good.
God. That would be again, Stark.
Okay, that's fine. You haven't seen Following, so you can't say that.
But you'll hear us discuss it next time.
Wait, is that the pick? That was the worst ever. If that was that was really anticlimactic. Is that the pick?
Yeah,
it's Craig's pick. We're going with Following by Christopher Nolan for next month. So, I mean,
unless HBO's done Hard Knocks with the Cowboys, and we can listen to Des Bryant talk. And...
You don't know what that means, Stark.
Dude, I've been on the Skype with you guys for like 6 hours.
We have, just for everyone who's not aware, this podcast, and I probably will try to cut in some kind of indicator to let you know about this, but there was a significant discussion that took place before the beginning of the recording of the podcast because we had some scheduling issues this evening, but...
You mean I forgot about it.
Right.
Wait, didn't you blame your cats at one point?
Oh, no, they don't get any blame this time. This is just, I straight up forgot about it. Like,
said,
I had
to return some videotapes.
Well, that's true, actually. I was returning.
It's just a mystery. It's just a mystery that Birdman of Alcatraz is so fresh on your memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did finish it today, and I'm not ashamed of that at all.
I did watch it like a month ago, for real.
What were you bringing back today, Ben?
Kathy Ireland workout
tapes. Third fan of
District 9, actually.
Speaking of which, by the way, if you like District 9, you should listen to
shameless plug.
You should listen to
Francesca and my podcast on Neil Blomkamp's latest Elysium, which you can find over at filmnerds.com.
Hey, since I'm not going to ever listen to that, did you like Elysium?
Ouch.
No, I'm just joking. I can't wait to listen to it.
Did they show it in full frame?
It was not available in full frame. I will tease you with this, though, that I will say that in that podcast, Francesca reveals that she thought that Matt Damon was playing a Hispanic person in that movie.
Fine.
So go listen to that.
All right, Craig, go on and listen to that, man.
But he was wearing a sombrero in the movie, right?
Right. I had to explain to her that it was just a quirky fashion choice.
The handlebar mustache was a...
Yeah.
He's got that he was sleepy.
And the fact that he was named
He's
Chico.
Got a poncho on made of microchips.
All right.
I'm actually going to bounce. So,
yeah, me too.
All right. Well, guys.
Enjoyed it, guys.
Hey, thanks for doing the podcast.
Thanks for
guys.
Sorry I was late. No problem. Bye.